Hey, Chris Manning here from Lockdown Cavs coming up. We're back, and Ken Carman from 92.3 The Fan joins us. What more do you need to know? The legend, part one of two of our conversation with Ken. Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app and join Evan and I this week, probably Thursday night, to get in on the action. Locker Room, changing the way we talk about sports.
Cavs need a three. Sexton works on Irving, trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down! Ground. Here goes Okoro to the bucket, and oh my! Okoro throws it down. 10 seconds to go. Here comes Colin Sexton. Sexton chased by Hill. Off to Stevens. Oh my! 45 ticks to go. That shot is blocked by Nance.
Get that big stuff out of here.
Prince knocks down that Harden pass. Garland's there. Garland upstairs for Allen. Oh, look out!
There you go. That's called team ball right there.
Joined now by the one and only, the proprietor of Tallboy Fridays, 92.3 The Fan's legendary Ken Carman. Ken, you're slumming to talk about the Cavs. I apologize. How are you?
What to talk about the Cavs?
You're slumming it. You're slumming it down here talking about the poverty franchise.
Oh, hell. I talked about the Browns for a long time. So I've been down in here. The gutter is nowhere new. It's like a dusty roads. Cavs won in 2016, so I wined and dined with kings and queens, and I slept in alleys and dined on the pork and beans.
I want to say this before we dive into Cavs stuff. I was watching Lakers Suns, and I was just and people were talking about comparing that Lakers team to the 2018 Cavs. And I was like, folks, 2018 LeBron, you gotta remember how special having that guy on your team is when you have even a marginally healthy LeBron James. Magical things can happen, so never take that for granted.
Yeah, I mean, he was hurt. We had a great big discussion about his legacy today. I'm going to end up having it tomorrow, so
yeah,
it'll be a good time.
So, Ken, we just heard from Kobe Altman, finally.
Mm-hmm.
I want to start there. What did you make of hearing from Kobe and what he had to say?
There's a lot of things on record, and I think he did some good just to kind of calm down the masses, calm down the fan base. I grew concerned because I think it's important for a general manager to talk. I know that this has been in the media here with Naomi Osaka here over the last week about how important it is for players to talk and how important media availability is. I think that, you know, it is every day or after every game, you know, because, you know, head coach in the NFL will give a press conference seven times a week just on different days. So I sometimes I think that's a little overkill, but I think a general manager in pro sports, a team president, owner needs to come out and speak frequently or at least, you know, three times a year, four times a year, maybe once a quarter. You kept the count. I didn't know. What was it, like 140 days since the last time he had spoken?
I want to say then up in the 133 or 34 range.
And when he spoke, was it the social justice initiative that he had spoke about, or which one was it?
It was the Jared Allen trade. He hits the Jared Allen trade, and that's like a big PR win. And he was not asked about Kevin Porter Jr. in that press conference at the same time, which was obviously like a big sticking point. That trade obviously kind of ended that era, and he wasn't that didn't really get touched on in that. So he sort of had like a very slam dunky press conference in that sense.
So you know, it's very weird because a lot of people, because I was so adamant for him to speak, thought I wanted him fired. I didn't want him fired. I really don't want him fired. I mean, I could hear an argument for him to be fired, trust me, but I don't really want him fired for a multitude of reasons that I'm sure we can get into. I just wanted him on the air about something, on the record about something. And I was like a little thrown off by some of the pushback of, what do you want him to say? I want him to sell his job. I want him to sell what he's doing. I want him to sell what the future is, because, you know, me, you don't need to answer to me. I'm whatever. You need to answer your season ticket holders who, you know, Lima kind of threw me off and made me a little nervous because he says they're leaving in droves. So that scares me. And I think that you need to step up and speak to your fan base and speak to your customers and at least try to explain what you're trying to do here. So I did think it was important for him to talk last Friday, and I thought he came off pretty well. There was a lot of things that he had a long press conference or a long media availability, and I think he answered a lot of questions. And I think a lot of those were the answers that I wasn't satisfied with were not really answers or not really things that he can answer right now. So I, you know, you're never satisfied with everything, but I don't really blame him for the answers that he had to give to certain questions about what they want to do in the draft and things like that.
And before we jump into exactly what Kobe said and like what you were and were not satisfied with and along with ourselves, how surprised are you that the Cavs actually let Chris ask Kobe a question?
Well, I gotta tell you, so I listened to, first off, was it just me or was his like was his connection a little thrown off there?
Mine? Yeah.
No, his connection. Kobe's. Oh, maybe, like, for a second, because I listened on our radio station until I got home, and then I tried to I clicked in on the fan, and I thought his questioning was a little askew. So they have a long history of not trying to answer your questions. Is that how this goes?
I have a very weird brand, Ken, and it is like I like to talk to people. I like getting annoyed at things, and I like trying to see what kind of I'm not even a confrontational human being. I just sometimes like seeing like how annoyed they can get at me for like being annoyed with them. Because sometimes they just like do weird. They act weird. You and I text you about this privately, and they're very weird sometimes. And I just like I like pointing it out that they're a very weird organization. A very
teams have become more sensitive over the last 10 years. Really sensitive. So can't say I'm surprised by that. You know, there's a couple comments I guess I'll keep to myself on question selection and things like that. Yeah, I'll keep those comments to myself. But yeah, I'm glad you got a question and happy about that.
Yeah, I was mostly joking since Chris apparently has a grease board by his bed where it says it's been this many days since.
No, I told you I got a knife.
The new number.
I told you I got a knife, and I was doing not really, but I was carving things into the wall. I was just, you know, every day, and then slowly going crazy and crazy. This is my like Joker origin story.
Yeah,
but. What did satisfy you from what Kobe shared with the media? Like Chris and I touched on this a bit. It took 50-ish minutes for him to talk about extending Jared Allen and Colin Sexton and kind of got a non-answer with that, which is to be expected. You need to have leverage when it comes to negotiations. So you can't really make things publicly known other than saying, yeah, we'd love to have him here. Like, I think that's pretty much the layup answer there. But what did Kobe say that satisfied you after not hearing from him for such a long time?
I thought he was as close to they're going to get as you know, taking on some mistakes. You know, there's always going to be some things that are murky, but I was just satisfied that he actually spoke in totality. I was just happy that he actually spoke to him. I was interested to hear about Jared Allen and Colin Sexton. There's certainly strong opinions on either one of those. And, you know, when it came to Kevin Love, you know, I know that there's a lot of things that he just has to fall on the sword for. You know, I don't believe that that was his sign. I believe that that was his boss's signing. I believe that that is a huge hindrance to them over the next couple of years. I think that that's going to be the source of frustration here over the next couple of years with this fan base. I don't think his behavior is going to change. I think he will continue to act out as long as he's a part of this organization, which I wish it would be a different way because I think that he has a sterling history here, obviously, and I don't want him to be remembered the wrong way on his way out. But, you know, I still like J.R. Smith, and he threw soup on his way out and went home. So maybe I overrate that. Just a little bit.
J.R. Smith ended his time. I distinctly have a memory of him standing next to Jordan Clarkson in the locker room his last time in Cleveland. Jordan Clarkson is wearing a West Virginia God's Country like trucker hat, which iconic. Jordan Clarkson, icon forever and ever. J.R. Smith is just sipping a Coors Light. Just in the corner, like just waiting for Jordan to leave. And then he dips out and then we never see him again. And then he doesn't like the key. He's, you know, not on good terms with the organization anymore, which is a bummer in its own right.
Yeah. I hope that he'll be in, you know, I hope it's kind of like WWE where he'll be during the anniversary, like 2026, maybe he'll be allowed back and we can let bygones be bygones and have some fun. Hopefully that'll be okay.
They're on better terms because Larry auctioned off one of JR's jerseys at the end of the season, so it might.
But is that a Larry? That's probably a Larry thing.
I would still guess that's a Larry thing. You know, he's kind of doing his own thing with that, and that's great. And I know that they've been supportive of that, so I don't know. I mean, we're talking about charity. Tried to talk him into another player's thing, and he just decided to do his thing, and they went, "Okay, that's fine. You know, do your deal." I don't think they're gonna. I'd roll my eyes pretty hard if they did, if they really pitched a bitch about J.R. Smith's jersey. So I'd imagine they were okay with it, I guess.
We'll be right back with our conversation with Ken, but Chris and I have to pay some bills, of course, and let me give you a quick word from our sponsor, Indeed. You're the hiring expert for your company, and what you really need is making your shortlist of quality candidates even better. You need a hiring partner who helps make your life easier. You need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster, and only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications, and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. With tools like Indeed Instant Match giving you quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description immediately, and Indeed skill tests that on average reduce hiring times by 27%, you can choose from more than 130 skill tests, and you add your must-have requirements so you can only pay for the applications that meet your requirements. According to TalentNest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all the job sites combined. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. So if you're interested, get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/locked. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/locked. Indeed.com/locked. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
I also want to tell you about our friends at Built Bar. Evan and I think, Evan, did you get the Grasshopper Bar box in the mail?
Oh, I love grasshopper cookies to begin with.
Yeah.
Want so good, especially when you put them in the freezer. I would not freeze these Built Bars because of how chewy they are in the middle.
Okay, so funny story.
I really thought
funny
about
story.
It.
Funny story. I put mine in the fridge because I got them. It was hot out. I've been gone.
That's the thing. Mine was hot, too. I'm like, this smells like mint chocolate cookies.
But I cooled them off in the fridge, and they were incredible. But Built Bar has something for everyone. My favorite flavor, honestly, might be the grasshopper cookie. I hope they're releasing that wide, and that wasn't just like an influencer bit for us. But they have other great flavors like coconut, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, and salted caramel. Most of the flavors have 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 4 grams of net carbs. Some other ones have 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, just 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. 9 amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your first order. Again, promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
So, Ken, where are you at with the Cavs, just broadly speaking?
A bad place.
Okay.
In a bad place.
Let's hammer.
It's a little better now because we're getting ready for the lotto. So, you know, you start to feel hope. But as the season ended, I was in a terrible place. I was angry. I was angry at some of the things I was hearing about. I get so tired of the comparison to Dame and CJ. I really do. I just think, and I get, hey, that's hopeful. I get it. That's fine. I just get, it's been 3 years, 2 years with Darius. So I just get so tired of hearing it. And I think it sounds like me with some of the Brown stuff I said in the past and just stuff that's not going to come true that I want to come true. I'd be happy to just make the playoffs and get bounced in the second round or something like that. I'd be really happy about that. But I got tired of that. And as the season wound on, it was just the Kevin thing and just the realization that no one's picking up this contract and you can't pay him to go away yet. I just had a meltdown at the end of the year. I really did. And the lack of any sort of accountability. And I got to tell you, some people bring up Dan Gilbert's son, Grant. And I'm like, I'm willing to try it out. I know he's very, very young. And it's like, I just need somebody to grab the wheel of this thing and point it in the right direction. And now that the season's over and we're getting ready for the lotto, and it's like, all right, we'll see how things can go. And fifth is still a good spot and all that other good stuff. I start to feel some hope about who they could draft and what they could do. And you hear a couple of different names that are interesting there. And if they can end up with a good spot, maybe this thing can get in the right direction. Because there is talent there. It's just how do you get it to mesh and how do you get it to go in the right way? And the only thing I just want to get back to the playoffs and do something and be a team that some people are excited about. I don't think we're going to be the Suns, but I think that this can be a team that at least gets back to the playoffs. You can get people back into the arena, wave some towels, and I don't know, see if you can have an upset of a game or two, or maybe in the next year you can do something there. So I'm hopeful now instead of just in a bitter, bitter place like I was just about a month and a half ago.
How much does winning, do you think, cure a lot of these issues? Because I've said this for a while now. Like, people want to point fingers at JB, which I think is odd, because I think JB has done the best he can at times with this roster. People want to point fingers at the young players on this team. I think you're putting a lot of pressure and expectations on 19, 20, even 21-year-olds, and I think that's unrealistic and unfair. People want to point fingers at Kobe, and I think he does deserve some of the culpability here. But if this team just starts winning next year, do you think a lot of the answers and issues are smoothed over? Because I think this team has lost some ugly games, and I think Kevin Love's open disdain with being here, I think him saying I would love to play in Portland while he's still under contract with the Cavs is never a good look. And yeah, I think Chris and I both agree that he's probably on the fast track to on his way out of here, and I think a buyout could be imminent at this point, because it's just best to have this divorce happen and let this marriage get even uglier and uglier. I think that's just a disservice to the rest of this roster. I don't know. I just think if the Cavs do get a little lottery luck and they, let's say they land one of these top two or three players, whether you think Jalen Green deserves to be in that conversation or not alongside Mobley and Cunningham, I think this fixes a lot of the issues for the team. And like you said, they're not going to be the Suns. They're not going to be the second or first best team in the Eastern Conference. I think the play-in tournament's a realistic goal for them next year. And if the Cavs keep crawling and then eventually walking, then they can start running. But I think winning is going to be the next step for them. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I do. You got to win the right games. You got to win the right way. I mean, if some team has a scheduled loss, what I got upset about is that there were a couple times you played – at the beginning of the year, that was kind of fun. Okay, I got excited about that. But there were times where they'd be 10 games under 500. They'd play a team that had a scheduled loss. Like, they played, God, I think they played the Bulls, I want to say, sometime in February. And they beat the Bulls by 10, and it was like, we're fixed. Told you guys, look at this team. And I'd just be sitting there going, Jesus Christ. Listen to what's – I mean, the Bulls are 10 games, 11 games at that time under 500. We're easily that same level. And I used to get just mad. I go, that's not fixing anything. That doesn't make anything better. I was like, you guys need to stop this stuff. Like, Netley. Like, if you're competing against top Eastern teams when they're on the first game of back-to-back, if they actually have their players playing, you know, maybe you can catch, like, next year, do you catch Boston sleeping? Do you play tight against Brooklyn? I know they had beat Brooklyn at the beginning of the year. Do you play tight against a healthy Brooklyn team? Do you play tight against Milwaukee? You know, there's going to be a couple times where you just get your brains beat in. That happens. Mm-hmm. Hey, it's the NBA. You know that. You guys know that. But, you know, give me some decent basketball. And if you're 500 and, you know, your margin of defeat is not that far. Honestly, if you're covering the spread, and, you know, I don't pay attention to lines that much, but if you're a team that covers the spread, like, they were worse against the spread after the first 10 games, I think is the number. That just shows me that you're either rolling out the balls and just playing and doing whatever, or you're injured, which they did have injuries, or you're a nothing. And there were just so many times that they were a nothing. And I got tired of people convincing each other that they were something. This year, if they have this nucleus healthy, I want to see how Okoro develops. I do not want Darius Garland and Colin Sexton to stop them from drafting a wing or drafting a guy on the perimeter. That doesn't bother me. I don't think that should stop them. I'm still looking for the best overall talent, especially mm-hmm. if I'm in that one or mm-hmm. two slot. I'm looking for the best overall talent. I'd lose my mind and have a heart. My heart would just explode in my chest. I'd be a great big blue ball, and I would just fall over and keel and die if they did something like that. That's how angry I would be. So I can't allow that to happen, because you're drafting for talent and need, because you need good players and you need a talented player. So all that coming together would make me hopeful for the future. Because I don't know, you know, if they're one or two, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong with any one of those players, whether it be Mobley. I'm a big fan of Cade Cunningham. I can't believe I watched that much Big 12 basketball this year, for Christ's sake. I'm a fan of him. There's a couple of spots where I just don't think he can go wrong. And again, I see where they took Colin Sexton, and people think I just hate Kobe Altman, and I don't. There are landmines around Colin Sexton in that draft when he took Colin Sexton at 8. And he took Sexton at 8, and he could have taken Kevin Knox, and this thing could have been an even worse disaster than what.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And so I give Kobe Altman credit for that. But there's other questions of...
Hey, guys. Chris and I got to pay the bills one more time, and I got to give you a quick word from our sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC, MMA, Logan Paul boxing action.
Evan definitely bet $5,000 on Logan Paul, just so everyone knows.
I actually could care less about Logan Paul.
That's the right
answer.
Before
the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs or are currently in the playoffs right now. So, head to their website on your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, but only if you use the promo code LOCKEDON, like the podcast network. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
You know what they've done that just kind of throws them up. You guys were saying about a buyout being imminent. Last look, was it 62? How many millions of dollars do we have left on this contract?
It's about 60.2, I want to say, over the next 2 years, but they could stretch and waive them, so it's about $12 million a year for the next 5 years.
I mean, that's just...
I mean, it's a tough pill to swallow.
What a business. What a business. Yeah. I'd rather take the $12 million for five... Stretch it out, make it a Bobby Bonilla contract. Stretch it out even further. See if he'll agree to something like that. Let's do Bobby Bonilla, $1 or $2 million a year until you're like 65.
That'd be good, honestly, just for the content. The thing that Kobe, in relation to this, I think said that was most notable was that he name-checked the Hawks and the Suns as teams that he could see the Cavs following a path. And, like, those are, like, very high-end hopes, because the Hawks just made the second round and have Trey. The Suns just beat the freaking Lakers, have Chris Paul, have Devin Booker, who's leagues above anyone the Cavs have in terms of, like, a young star.
I mean, Mikal Bridges is no slouch either.
Right. And they got Ayton.
Yeah.
Like, so
where are you going to find a vet like Chris Paul that's going to play along like that?
That's the
thing. You hoped Kevin Love would be that pro, but Kevin Love had a sour taste in his mouth the moment he realized the reality of his situation.
Yeah, and Andre came here and even though he's a likable person, moaned and things didn't go well. Yeah,
and Larry is like good, but I don't know if he's like. He's not that good. What it signals, I think, is that like they may be willing to sacrifice like some stuff right now to like try and win something next year. And I don't know what that results in. I was doing like the trying to like find workable like CJ McCollum trades, not just for like getting him at Browns games and like Swenson's commercials, but like also like figuring out like, you know, if you pair him with Garland,
I wrote about this for Fear the Sword, Chris, but I think I might step away for a few weeks, like legitimately step away for a while if they traded for CJ. I love CJ McCollum. I love his game. I love the connection to Northeast Ohio. But if you have Garland, Sexton, and McCollum on this roster,
you're trading one of them. If you get McCollum, one of those guys.
But then my counterpoint to that is, why would you pay for a 30-year-old making $30 million?
Because you're trying to make
a cost control deal.
I'm not saying that it's like. Right, but I'm saying you're trying to make the playoffs at that point. You're trying to say, like, hey, like, we're going to sell some tickets. We're going to, like, make a playoff. We're going to at least make, like, a play-in push. That's what you're doing. And if you're also, like, saying, like, hey, Kevin, we just went and got, like, a veteran. Like, because you might not be trading Kevin at the same time. Like,
how can I move Colin Sexton on that deal? Because I've already ran the offense through Colin Sexton, and I'd rather Colin Sexton be off ball.
Yeah.
Maybe you guys disagree. Sorry. I don't know.
I think Garland might already be better, is where I'm at on this.
Yeah. And I'd like to run the offense through Darius Garland and see where it goes there. And then, you know, and CJ McCollum is a volume guy, and that's great. I get nervous about, all right, CJ McCollum's way better than Larry Nance. Don't get me wrong at what they do. And I like Larry Nance, but like if his name was Larry Smith, what would we be saying about Larry Nance? If his name
was exactly. Larry? Chris and I talk about this a lot. Like, if Larry Nance wasn't named Larry Nance, I think he'd be a lot more available for the Cavs.
He'd be a Phoenix Sun right now.
Yeah. Like, a lot of teams were asking the Cavs this whole last season, hey, is Larry Nance available? And the Cavs drove up the market so high that, yes, he's available, but you have to offer them quite a bit to get rid of him.
And they can't – they act like they don't care what fans think. And so it's like, well, if you don't care what fans think, then just trade the guy.
Right.
Because I'm just like, yeah, man, it'll be a bad day when if they traded Larry Nance, and people would complain. But I think they're just complaining because – they traded away Larry Nance's son, where I don't even think the people complaining have watched the Cavs. So we just take a bunch of people who would complain about the Cavs who haven't watched the Cavs. And again, Larry Nance is a fine enough player and a good basketball, a really good team could use Larry Nance, but I could use Larry Nance to trade Larry Nance and wish Larry Nance well. But man, you bring up CJ McCollum and it's almost like, all right, 30 years old, $30 million, like you said. Well, how do I get rid of Sexton in this case? Because I don't know if you're any one of these other teams, do you want Colin Sexton? Do you really? He's tough and he works his ass off.
I was going to ask you.
But now I'm going to pay the guy. I have to pay him.
How nuclear would the diehards of this team go if they traded Colin Sexton at this point? Like, we all know Hiram's a big Colin Sexton guy. Like, I can't even imagine how upset he'd be. And, like, guys in that vein who just live, breathe, eat the Cavs if they traded Colin Sexton. I just don't see it happening.
Is this a trade for picks?
I
think if they trade Sexton, it's a win now sort of move. Like, I don't like
it's to help grease the wheels to get CJ McCollum. So, like, in theory, you send Kevin Love and Colin Sexton for CJ McCollum. I think maybe Portland could come around to that, but it's just, I don't know. It feels like a lateral move for both teams too. Cause I don't know if Portland really wants to take on Kevin Love's contract. I know that's a fun homecoming story. And then like Colin Sexton makes sense in a vacuum, I guess, but he kind of provides the same stuff that CJ does, just 2 inches shorter. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's just, it's a tough thought exercise because there are teams that would be good for CJ McCollum. And I think the Cavs could be an interesting destination if they really want to shake things up. I just don't know if they're willing to because they've really penciled in Colin Sexton as the face of the franchise. And I don't know how you can walk that back and say, okay, we'll be traded for the local kid who plays for Portland right now.
I think that'd be the only way. I think that'd be the only way you wouldn't have people rioting at the doorstep. But I just think if you got to make a move, you got to make a move and you need to deal with that. You know, you just got to have strong gates. Because you just have not proven good enough that nobody is untouchable on this basketball team. Like I'd be probably upset if they moved on from Garland some way somehow, even though like that's pretty impossible. And you know, I'm just naming a name for an example here. If they move on from any one of these people, I'd go, all right, what are we getting in return, and how are we going to make this thing work? Because they're just not in a spot where I have to say, this guy's got to stay. We can't move on from this guy. This guy has to stay no matter what. I just think I'm open to anything here. And while there'd be people who would be upset, it'd be tough. Tough. I mean, you're just going to have to deal with it. They're not good enough to keep one specific person over everybody else.
Allen might be the closest thing you have to like a more proven commodity in that regard.
That might be the only one. You know what? You're right. Jared Allen would probably be the one guy to be like, what are we doing here now?
Well, even that, it depends on, like, if a team comes – and there's not a lot of teams with caps, but if some team comes in and, like, throws in, like, way too much money, then maybe you just be like, okay, like, we don't want to give him $25 million a year. Like, I can see how you get to that point. They're just in a weird spot. Like, I don't envy them from trying to do this. And, like – there's a lot of things that could have gone differently. I mean, like missing in Windler is big of a blow on it in some ways as,
you know, I still want to say, is missing on Windler really a thing, or is it just bad luck that he
hurt,
broke down and is consistently
like,
hurt?
He's a zero at that. Like he doesn't matter.
He's a non-factor. He's a zero. And I don't think it's a miss of a pick, but does it sting more because Shams Charania said the Cavs were taking Keldon Johnson and then they corrected course and said it's Dylan Windler. Now you have Keldon Johnson playing really well for the Spurs. I mean, yeah, it stings, but I don't know if that's really a miss at the time.
I just think when you're a team like Cleveland, and I think Boston is like probably the most recent example of this, and Portland is in some examples too, because like, you know, like Nazir Little hasn't mattered for them. It was a late first round pick, I think, in the same draft. Like you have to like churn development on these later round first round picks and the second round guys. And when you don't do it, taking that step forward becomes like a lot harder to do. And you're banking on like
Damian Dotson like becoming like good or something, or like Jetty Osman like reverting into what he sort of was before like playing awful this year, right? Like you have to like hit those development picks over and over and over again to sort of make this thing like actually sort of flow. And like Windler just missed, and then KPJ missed, and then like Garland's rookie year was just sort of like meh. Like I don't, you know what I mean? Like I don't know what you make of that rookie year at all. And then it's, you're just sort of left where you are now, and it's all exasperated by the fact that like you hired John Beilein, had to fire him, brought in JB, the pandemic happens, then you have this weird season. Like it's all just bizarre.
I'm patient with Garland because I don't think he's played regular basketball in like 3 years.
No.
I mean,
no.
You get hurt.
He got hurt over the pandemic, as far as I understand. Like, yeah. He was so
four and a half games of your college career, you're out. Then you're in a season, you just said the pandemic. Then you get hurt during the pandemic, according to what you heard there. You couldn't play in the bubble. You weren't eligible to play in the bubble. Then this year, like, it's still a weird schedule, and there's not fans in a lot of places until even, I mean, God, how many people were at the Cavs games at the end of the year? I mean, what NBA arena had decent attendance? No, none. We didn't get good attendance in a lot of arenas until the first round of the playoffs. And I think that matters to people. I think that you're seeing with Milwaukee, that matters to them. Like there is a flow to people being in the stands. And I kind of feel bad for Darius Garland. That's why Darius Garland has given me a reason to hammer him, but even if he did, I'd still kind of soft pedal a little bit going, man, it's been 3 years of weird stuff with you and it's not your fault. I want to see what you're like when, all right, we're allowed to have people in the arena and you can have an actual preseason that starts on time and your coach is there and all that other stuff that we get excited about. Then I can start the clock on Darius Garland.
Also, just want to tell you about the Locked On Today podcast, folks. So the Locked On Today podcast is covering all sports you need in under 20 minutes. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Earlier in the week, they had a really great episode on the Bucks and where the Bucks go now and that they're down 2-0 to Brooklyn. So go check that out.